Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Traitor state of Indiana, where Obama's ideals are not espoused, comes the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show as a means to tell all you liberals out there that you are wrong and we are right. My name is Kathy Hinners, and you're listening to Hour 1 of the show, where we do what we do best, tell you what the government is doing to this great nation with Obama and his minions. We're showing you ways to stop them by following the true law of the land, the Constitution. And now, heard through ConservativeNationMedia.com, here is your host from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world, Robert Garding.
Okay, it's good to have everybody that's going to listen to this show. Listen, last week I started my show with an advertisement of my new book that I just had published. It was a long time in the making, but now it can be gotten from several places. The address I gave last week was http://www.createspace.com/486-9187. And since then, I have designed and built a new website that is specifically for the selling of the book, and the ones that are going to follow it in the series after I get them typed and set up and ready to be published. And that address is one that I will put in the chat room now. Like I said last week, I don't type and talk very well at the same time. So, but that's it. Yeah, it's http://guardingr.wix.com/book/store/, and you can get the book from there also. Check it out and buy the book, and thank you in advance. On to the news, and if I have to have to clear my throat today, I am in the process of catching something, and it's in my throat today, so hopefully I'll be able to do the show. I had talked with Douglas Gibbs earlier in the week, and hopefully he will call today. We were supposed to have he was supposed to call in on the first hour of the show, so hopefully he will do it. But on to the news from MSNBC. I just couldn't help but put this one right at the beginning. Excuse me. A caller had MSNBC's hostess, Crystal Ball, and that's Crystal with a K, completely in the dark with a prank call on Thursday. A supposed witness to the crash of the Malaysian airliner in Ukraine told MSNBC's Crystal Ball Thursday that it appeared to have been shot down by a, quote, blast from Howard Stern's ass, unquote. And then he called her a dumbass when she didn't seem to understand she was being punked. Ball appeared to either not hear him or understand the joke about Stern, immediately asked the sergeant about his military training and what sort of missile system he thought. I got that audio for you. Yeah, and it's great. You've got to listen to this one.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can. Please tell us what you saw there on the ground in Ukraine.
Well, I was looking out the window and I saw a projectile flying through the sky, and it would appear that the plane was shot down by a blast of wind from Howard Stern's ass.
So it would appear that the plane was shot down. Can you tell us anything more from your military training of what sort of missile system that may have been coming from?
Well, you're a dumbass, aren't you?
I'm sorry, sir. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with all the latest next.
Now, I first heard this one on the radio show on WIBC, Chicks on the Right, and that's here in Indianapolis. When they played this, they were just laughing almost uncontrollably over this. When you have to admit, it is funny on a sad subject, but it goes to show just how untrustworthy the reporting on the mainstream media really is. It just blew me away that what this man said went right over her head, and it didn't even register, even after he called her a dumbass. You are listening to this episode of the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show with your host, Robert Garding. We are glad you're here on this July the 19th. Good grief, this year is going by fast. Before you know it, the first snow is going to be falling, and I am not looking down a little bit here. But, yeah, of course, it probably won't. But on with the show. Now, I think right now I have Doug on the line, don't I?
Yes, you do.
Oh, boy. This is Douglas V. Gibbs. I have talked about him on this show a lot. Him and I and several others were among the first on Blog Talk Radio when this whole thing started out, or when Blog Talk Radio started. But he's in Murrieta, California. And I'm glad he called in. He is has a blog called Political Pistachio, and he is on Blog Talk Radio, and lately has been on Hannity, Fox and Friends, and many other outlets because of his being where the news was and being able to report on it. Good to have you here with us today, Doug. I hope you and yours are doing well.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I was in the right place at the right time, I guess, when it came to that issue. I've lived in Murrieta since 1989, and it's been a sleepy little town where nothing really happens, and then suddenly we're, you know, got a national spotlight.
Something that, you know, I look at really closely here, because I live in a town of like 980 people. Nothing's ever going to happen here, but you never know anymore, huh?
Well, you're not too far from a pretty big city from what I understand.
No, I'm only about 24 miles from Indianapolis, and then I've got Brownsburg here too, so which is a good-sized little town. But
Murrieta real quick. See, I'm in Southern California, where it's pretty much solid city almost everywhere, and Murrieta sits in a area that's pretty rural, actually, between the L.A. Basin and San Diego County. So we are considered a small town, a very rural area away from everything, and we have kind of a small town attitude. So that's the reason why people around the country were kind of shocked when they realized that Murrieta has 108,000 people. So wait a second, that was a small town. California standards, in a sense, it is. But it's basically Temecula and Murrieta right next to each other, and they're about a little over 100,000 each, and then Menifee just to our east, which is Newer City, and they're climbing up to that number pretty quickly themselves. We are, like I said, we are basically in that area that's tucked between San Diego County and L.A. Basin, and we are about 100 miles from the border.
Yeah.
And so hopefully that kind of frames it for a few people. They kind of understand where I'm at. Now, I was on television 10 times, 4 times on Fox, 1 time on One American News, Al Jazeera, MSNBC, Channel 6 and Channel 10 down in San Diego, and some German television station. So,
I got to that channel. I got to see you on Hannity, so that was pretty cool. But I haven't heard much about what was happening in Murrieta last week like I was hearing, actually what's happening in Murrieta this week like I was last week. Has it all died down now, or is it still going and being ignored by the mainstream media?
Well, no, we still have protesters out there, not in the numbers that we did before, because what had happened is these – and I'll explain kind of the details of it in a bit, but basically the flights and the busloads have pretty much stopped coming to Murrieta. That does not mean they're not necessarily in California. They're not coming into California in the numbers that they were. That said, though, there are some coming in. What the federal government has done to get around dealing with Murrieta and some of these cities is they've made deals with churches to take them and you know, things like that. Now, I am at the KCAA studios right now, by the way. So if you hear every once in a while, like it sounds like a radio show or something in the background, I'm walking around doing stuff. That's what you hear.
Oh,
but anyway, so it's died down. Now, this weekend we actually got more people out protesting, but it's as a part of a national protest weekend. Yesterday and today, we've got over 200 communities around the country standing with Murrieta and protesting.
Yeah, I think Indianapolis was one of them. I have seen reports of people on the overpasses over I-69 and I-65 and 70 out here. So I'm hoping that this doesn't die down because it's something that really needs to be pushed hard. We've got a government right now that's just taking over and not caring what the people want, and this whole thing with them trying to drop these children in places that they're not wanted, whether people want them or not, is just totally wrong. And I was really proud to see you standing out there and talking with people about this. But
understand, it goes beyond just a place where these people are not wanted. We can't absorb these numbers. We just can't handle these kinds of numbers, first of all, not only into our communities, but these facilities. It's like I was explaining to Hannity and a lot of these other people that when I was on TV, is that this facility in Murrieta, it's been around for about 8 years, and it's out in kind of away from the city in kind of a dirt area. And trying to handle 20 to 25 people at a time. And they're bringing in 140 to 200 people at a time. So first of all, you've got a facility that's not capable of handling these kinds of numbers. You walk, and very few people have seen the insides of this place, but the ones that have, our response is, it looks like a jailhouse. It's a big concrete room with a handful of steel benches and a toilet in the corner, and these people that are dirty because dirty and tired and sick, in the same clothes that they were in when they crossed the border, can't sleep. They're not going to be fed. They're not getting any health screening. Now they're crammed into this room with other people sick. So if they're not sick yet, they're going to be sick. Then that one load of illegal aliens that we turned around when we turned around the buses. Nearly a third of the people on those buses had scabies. We've had one Border Patrol agent test positive for tuberculosis, and I'm talking the aggressive strain. We've got H1N1, smallpox, you name it, it's crossing the border with these people. And one out of three of the girls, minor girls, during their trek coming to the United States are raped. Many of the boys are molested. So it's not just bad for us, it's bad for them. So, it's like I told people, I really see the federal government as really participating in child abuse and exploiting these children for a political purpose And the way to solve it is basically to secure the border. Don't encourage these people to come. And, of course, you know, you've seen in the news, you know, that back in January, they were already setting up, preparing for over 60,000. Of course, the number's like, you know, five times that that's come across since then. But they were preparing for like a load of 60,000 people to come across the into the United States. They saw it coming. They encouraged it. If anything, the federal government probably orchestrated it. You know, and when it came to our community, and basically what happened is they're coming across the Rio Grande Valley there in Texas, because we have a fence along the California border in most areas. So it's harder for them to cross into California. So they're all crossing at the Rio Grande Valley, and it's overrunning the Texas facility. So what they're doing is they're putting them on planes, flying to San Diego, and then putting them on buses and bringing them to places like Murrieta. And we basically said no. I mean, and they've been doing this for 8 months. That's a lot of people don't realize. They've been doing it for 8 months, but it was a smaller number. They were only bringing in 20, 40 at a time. In the middle of the night, no one was noticing, except for a few of us that were involved, and we were talking about it and all that. But when they jacked that number up a few weeks ago, we're like, all right, that's it. Bad enough you've been doing this in the middle of the night in small numbers. Now you're just gonna overrun us. And what was happening is these people, after they're being processed, are basically being let off on the side of the road with a bus ticket, a pat on the head, and a piece of paper that tells them to show back up someday for their hearing, of which 95% to 98% don't. And
yeah, well that's one of the things we keep hearing.
I'm sorry.
I said that's one of the things that we keep hearing here in Indiana, that most of the people who are set up for these appointments to go and see people about them being here, they never show up.
Yeah, 95% to 98% don't show up. And that's not a surprise. And it's like my wife said, you know, it's illegal to drop a dog off on the side of the road because it's inhumane, but yet the federal government does that with people. So it's not good for them either. So, I mean, this is not just some, you know, racist white guy, you know, who's against immigration. I mean, I'm worried about these people, too. And then, of course, as I was talking about American Daily Review Radio earlier, right before I called into your show, it's also a national security issue. We've got ISIS ripping across Iraq, ISIS or ISIL, whichever you want to call them, depending on your news source. And now Jordan is in their sights, and they've already said they want to direct confrontation with the United States. And understanding that, I remember about 10 years ago, I read a study that one out of three illegal immigrants that were crossing around the San Diego area were of Middle Eastern descent. Now today, that number is 40%. 40% are either North African or Middle Eastern descent. So it's also a national security issue.
That was one of the questions I was going to ask you, is that do you believe that Al-Qaeda has come into America through that southern open corridor that we call our border? And I think that they probably have. I mean, it's common news to everybody that border is wide open. So I'm surprised that we haven't had an influx of Al-Qaeda or other people who wish this country harm to just flow right on through like with everybody else.
Yeah, well, the thing is, too, is this something else that I ask people. There's a 2008 law that was supposed to, you know, it's supposed to protect about the human trafficking, and basically what it says is that any child that comes across the border that's not from Mexico, in other words, a country that does not border the United States, we can't deport them. And it was to protect against human trafficking and so on and so forth. And, of course, that law is being totally taken advantage of. Hang on just a sec. We need to call the guest at this number right there. I'm just talking to my engineer. But anyway, so we've got these people coming across. They know if they're not from Mexico, they can't be deported. How many of them are Mexicans? And they're saying they're from Guatemala.
Yeah.
That's the first thought. The second thought is, and this is something I looked up, that law, they made it sound like it was for some humanitarian reason. The reason they passed that law in 2008 was not for human trafficking, or to protect the children and all the good humanitarian reasons they gave us. The reason why they passed that law is because what was happening was if they captured someone, say, from Guatemala, and then they tried to deport them back, first of all, they couldn't just drive them across Mexico. Mexico wouldn't let us do that. So we'd have to fly them to Guatemala, and Guatemala was saying, no, we don't want them. We refuse to take them. So what do you do with them? You've got to keep them. So what the politicians are thinking, okay, well, we got to keep them. There's no way around it. Let's make it look good for us. Hey, we'll have a good humanitarian reason for keeping them. And that was what that law was about, was to cover up the fact that it wasn't for some humanitarian reason that we're keeping these people, not deporting them. It is because their countries won't take them back, and which makes it obvious that the solution isn't deportation, it's securing the border. Now that said, the first question a lot of people ask me, especially the liberal leftists, well, why wouldn't they want their own people back? Because once there's an immigrant, an illegal alien in this country, one of the things they do once they start working is they start sending money home. And American money in the economy of whatever country that money's going to is good for that economy.
Yep. That's for sure. I've also heard reports that out of these children that are streaming across our borders, I keep getting these reports that many of them are belonging to so-called MS-13 gangs.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. Have you had any been hearing of any troubles with that in your area?
We haven't had in our area that erupted just yet, but there's a lot of reports that not just MS-13, there's other gang affiliations coming across the border, also drug cartel affiliations. And here's the thing. Think about this. People are saying, well, why are they suddenly all these people come across the border? What's behind this? Well, and I do believe that the federal government is a part of, a part of the problem in orchestrating this. I think there's another conductor, if you want to talk about orchestrating it. There is another conductor. I do think it's the drug cartels because it's good for them. And not only for the distraction, but to get their people in. All these gang members that we're talking about, I do believe that they're affiliated with these drug cartels. So are a lot of these people affiliated with these gangs? Absolutely. Are they affiliated with the drug cartels? Absolutely. But it's not only to get them into the country, but also while our law enforcement is busy with all the illegal immigration, there's less personnel remaining to deal with the drug cartels. The border in some places is a war zone because of the drug cartels. And it's not just because of the drug cartels, but also because of other things which I think are directly connected. For example, you read the story a couple weeks ago about the Mexican military helicopter flew across the border, took a couple pop shots at our border agents. It would not surprise
me if that
was.
I think I reported that.
It would not surprise me if that was directly correlated with drug cartel activities.
Mm-hmm.
Would not surprise.
Well, we have people like Harry Reid, and I've got an audio of him saying this later on in the show, of him saying that the border is secure.
Yeah.
And then we have this whole thing with these kids where I've read reports of these children, and I am talking younger ones who are dead on the Rio Grande River. Now, this caught my attention because I used to live in New Mexico. I know that river. I lived by it. And it's a big river. But we got kids turning up dead there, and my idea on this is how humanitarian is that to allow them to keep coming in like this and dying on the way?
Well, allow them? We are encouraging it. Not only are we encouraging it, but so are those countries. I mean, in Mexico, my wife was born in Mexico. She immigrated here as a child legally when she was just with her family when she was like a year and a half old. When we got married, she had a green card. She naturalized in 2007 after a three-year process of naturalization process. And I'm familiar with this. But anyway, in Mexico, when we go down there to visit family, there are actually billboards up that say, that tell the people what to say when they go to the United States, what to ask for, what to demand, and so on and so forth. One of the first things these people do, because you're talking about these children that are dying, Well, the ones that survive, one of the first things they do is they try to find the Border Patrol, tug on their leg, and ask to be arrested.
Now, that one I hadn't heard.
Then, once they are taken into custody, the first words out of their mouth is, I want a hearing. Because once they ask for a hearing, they are entitled to a hearing. Because remember, in America, you're innocent until proven guilty, even if they saw you cross that border. You are entitled to a hearing in the United States. You are innocent until proven guilty. But they cannot hold you for more than 72 hours without a hearing, and they can't get you a hearing fast enough. So that's why it's every 72 hours that they're releasing these people. They process them, for the hearing. Then they get a little piece of paper that says, show up at a Border Patrol station or an ICE station for your hearing in 10 to 15 days or 3 weeks or whatever, and then they let them loose. And in many cases, what they'll do is they'll actually ask them, where were you going? And if they say, oh, I've got family in Chicago, they will give them a bus ticket to Chicago or a bus ticket to Indianapolis or a bus ticket to Baltimore or wherever these people say. So ICE is actually making sure these people go where they say they're going with American taxpayer money.
Mm-hmm.
But they're saying
it costs too much
to support these people.
I reported last week how the Obama administration has always told us that there's too many of them, they can't find them, they don't know where they're at, yet they're finding the parents who are here illegally to reunite them with the children that are coming in now illegally.
Right.
And a lot of people don't seem to remember many of the things Obama said, but I remember that being said, and I thought, they can find people out of millions and millions of us who don't pay taxes. How can they not find these people
that are here illegally? Yeah, it's like I said on ADR. They tell us they don't know who these people are or where they're at, but yet they can tell us that 40% of them are of Middle Eastern or North African descent. Well, they know who they are. If they could figure out the original cow with mad cow disease, and they could get it all the way down, they can figure where these people are. But the thing is, I was talking to an ICE agent, and the ICE agent told me, when these people cross the border, they're going somewhere, and it's our job to make sure they get where they're going. I kid you not, that's what I was told. Partly because that 2008 law, countries won't take them back, and it goes. And so people go, well, what's the solution? We can't deport these people. But the solution is securing the border. Every single immigration reform law or attempt to, a guest worker or whatever people want to do means nothing until we secure the border. Now, basically, we've got a boat with a hole in the bottom. We got a bunch of politicians with spoons spooning water out, and then when we said, hey, guys, spooning water out isn't going to fix it, there's a hole in the boat. Obama walked up and said, okay, that's fine, I'll take care of it. And he came with a shotgun. He shot two more holes in the boat. That's basically what happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, I found another one here from a Lisa Maloney Vinton, who is a Murrieta resident, who provided Breitbart, Texas, with a purported copy of an advertisement that was put up by the Crittenden Services and Foster Family Agency that read, help heal the wounds of abused and neglected children. Crittenden FFA is looking for loving, compassionate parents to provide a loving home for the children in foster care programs, including survivors of human trafficking and unaccompanied refugee minors, reimbursement up to $6,054 monthly tax-free support, and it had license numbers on there and everything.
Mm-hmm. Federal government paying off churches, paying off foster agencies, they're paying them off to participate.
It seems to me like nobody's taking this serious.
Well, you said something there, though. There's a key word in there that you used when you were reading that, the word refugee. First of all, none of these countries are listed as political or religious persecution areas, and so technically under UN guidelines, these children are not refugees. However, even by calling them refugees, that it has alerted the UN. The UN is now taking action to try to convince us, force us to start accepting these quote-unquote refugees based on certain UN charter requirements.
That was one of the questions I was going to ask you about, if you'd heard about that one.
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, I wrote about it. I wrote about it about a week ago. But, yeah, the United Nations is now getting involved because of that word refugees. Now, it doesn't matter if you and I think they're refugees. It's what they think. You know, Thomas Jefferson is quoted as saying, a nation is not a nation without borders.
Mm-hmm.
The idea here is to destroy the American system. This is what's going on. This goes way deeper than immigration. It's like I try to explain to people. The immigration issue is not about immigration. Hobby Lobby was not about a woman's right, reproductive rights. Gay marriage is really not about marriage. None of these items are about what they tell you it's about. They tell you it's about these things on the surface to make you, your emotions flow and so on and so forth. But all of these issues are about the same thing, whether or not the federal government can force its will upon us, constitutionally or unconstitutionally. That's what it's all about. And the reason why the federal government wants to force its will upon us is because they do not like the American system. They do not like local issues being handled by local government. They want all issues consolidated under the central government. And that is something that our Constitution was written specifically to fight against. This is so much deeper than what's on the surface. And this is what I tried to get through on Hannity and a couple other shows. It's like I told them, I teach Constitution classes. This is the federal government forcing its will upon a community, upon Americans, regardless of what the law says. Now, Article 4, Section 4 of the United States Constitution states that the federal government will protect the states from invasion. If you look up invasion, it's defined as an unwanted encroachment. This is an invasion. Also, in Article 1, Section 8, it calls for Congress to call forth the militia to help repel invasions. They've refused to do that. Everybody seems to think it's up to the executive branch, by the way, to call forth the militia. It's actually up to the governors and the Congress, but that's a different story. We've got immigration laws on the books for a reason. And one of the primary reasons is health screening, to protect the receiving population from potential health problems, potential criminals that might come into this. Because it's like they do these criminal checks. What they're checking, when they tell you they do a criminal check on these aliens, what they're checking on is if they've committed crimes in the United States, not if they were criminals at home. That's something else to also think about. And then also to protect us from terrorist activity and so forth. So the immigration process is not there to be racist or discriminatory. It's to protect the receiving population from dangers that could be brought across the border if these people are not properly screened. The whole reason for Ellis Island to exist was it was a health screening facility. That's what Ellis Island did. It was all about health screening. Meanwhile, we are being called racist and discriminatory because we want the law to be followed. Now, get back to the Constitution. Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution tasks the president with faithfully executing the laws of the United States. So by him refusing to execute immigration law and for him and Congress to work together to secure the border, he is not faithfully executing the laws of the United States. He is acting unconstitutionally. I know it's a shock that President Obama would do such a thing. I know. Then he says, well, you know what? I'll do this with or without Congress, the way I want to do it. They're not willing to work with me the way I want them to. I'll do it. He says that with immigration reform. He says that with every other issue. And then that brings into play Article 1, Section 1. Article 1, Section 1 of the United States Constitution. And if you guys have a constitution out there, open it up. Article 1, Section 1, and it reads, all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in the United States Congress, consisting of two houses. Now, all means all. Legislative powers, that's the power to make law, modify law, repeal law, strike down law. So all legislative powers herein granted by the states, they're the states of the grantors, the federal government's the grantees, shall be vested or legally transferred to a Congress of the United States. In other words, he can't act without Congress legislatively. It's not within his powers. There's something called the there's a concept called separation of powers. Article 1 begins that all legislative powers belong to Congress. Article 2 begins that all executive powers belong to the president. Article 3 begins that all judicial power belongs to the Supreme Court and the inferior courts in the federal court system. That's separation of powers.
Mm-hmm.
And so he can't act legislatively or judicially on his own. Legislative powers belong to the Congress. Judicial powers belong to the judicial branch. He's the executive. Yet we've got him saying, I'm going to do it without Congress. And on the Hobby Lobby, I'm going to go over their heads too because I'm president. I'm the ruler. I'm king, whatever. That's not the way our system was set up. There are checks and balances in place on purpose. And we don't. And the strongest of three branches, it drives me nuts because people out there saying we have three co-equal branches, and we don't. The strongest branch is supposed to be the Congress, the legislative branch,
mm-hmm.
which was the voice of the people through the House and used to be, before the 17th Amendment, the voice of the states in the Senate. But those voices have been silenced. We've been told that the executive can overrun that branch of government. Well, that's what
I call essentially
it.
They've done that with Obamacare because the House is the purse strings of the nation, and they never did pass Obamacare.
Well, it's not even a matter of passing. The bill really didn't originate in the House. They say it did. It was an HR bill, but it actually originated in the Senate. And what they did is they took a House bill, they stripped it down naked, and then they put the Senate bill into its language and then said it originated in the House, and it didn't. It originated in the Senate. Well, Article 1, Section 7 requires – Article 1, Section 7 of the United States Constitution requires that all bills regarding revenue, in other words, anything that has to do with budget, anything that has to do with the money, has to originate in the House. Why? Well, that's the voice of the people. That mm-hmm. The reason why the founders did that, by the way, is so that if the federal government was doing something the people didn't like, they could starve it of money. You know, government shutdown, that was a tool the founders gave us. Meanwhile, we got a president saying founders would be upset about it. But that's a whole different story. But, we've got a system, the dynamics of our system are out of whack. And we've got a statist president, a statist government, not just the Democrats, but many of the Republicans too, taking advantage of the fact that the dynamics are out of whack, that we are in an unconstitutional crisis period right now, and they're taking advantage of it. Now, how do we turn this around? People say, well, I'm only one person. We can't do much. Let me explain something about the myriad of protests that became a nationwide phenomenon. And today, over 200 communities in the United States are standing with Murrieta and protesting that it turned the buses around, that it changed what the federal government had to do. Let me explain to you something about that. It began with 12 people. 12 of us were out there protesting. About 8 of them attend my Constitution class in Temecula. We started with a dozen people, and a dozen people made a national impact, ultimately. So when someone out there says, well, I'm just one person, what can I do? There's only a few of us. That dozen people became two dozen, and that two dozen became three dozen, and that three dozen became a couple hundred people that made sure those buses turned around.
I keep hearing that, too, that, I'm just one person. Well, if you're just one person, you're not going to try anything. You're definitely not going to make any effect on anything. But if you try something, you never know.
Our biggest enemy is complacency. That's our biggest enemy,
mm-hmm.
is complacency.
Yep, and we have a lot of that.
We get what we deserve.
I totally agree with that one. And I've essentially fallen into that racket too, because being as close to Indianapolis as I am, I've stayed completely out of that when they've had things that have happened that I could have actually gone to participate in, and I need to start participating in things like that. one of those things, I guess, but
I always seem to have something else going. Well, I believe that turning this country around directly has to do with educating the people. James Madison said, only an educated people can remain a free people. And then Jefferson, and I wish I had the quote with me. I'd read it to you exactly as it's worded. I don't think I have it with me here. But Thomas Jefferson said that, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember the exact quote. He said that that the people are the best army. From time to time, we may be led astray, but we will always return to our foundation. It's just like with a child. You know, if you give a child the right foundation, a child may rebel when they get older, but they'll return to that foundation more than likely. Well, our foundation is liberty. Our foundation is the Constitution, and we know it. It's in our heart. It's in our soul. We are Americans. We will return to that. We may be led astray for a moment, but we will return to it. Now, I'm a firm believer that an educated society is a free society, like James Madison believed. And that's why I teach Constitution classes. That's why I have Constitution stuff online. That's why I have the book out there and all that. And my book is, for those of you who are curious and you want to learn the Constitution, this is a step towards that. It's called 25 Myths of the United States Constitution. And I firmly believe that we've got to turn this country around, but we've got to do it through education. It's like a lot of people accuse me of preaching to the choir, and my response is always, what good is a choir if they don't know the words to the songs?
I have a person in my chat room from the Signalis show, I think, and he says the problem is the liberal teachers in our schools poisoning the kids. They have to be confronted. And that's one of the things I did here. We had a whole thing earlier, a couple of years ago, where they were trying to push Obama in my daughter's school, and I told, you know, they were going to have a whole rally around that subject, and I told the school, I said, no, she's not allowed to go that. And they sent her anyway, and all hell broke loose over that one.
Well, it's getting ugly with Common Core, because, see, what they're doing now is they're instituting Common Core. And the reason why Common Core is so dangerous is not only because of the liberal curriculum that's being introduced in the schools that's even worse than what we already got, but that all testing to get into universities will be based on Common Core standards. The reason why they're doing that, it is a way of forcing private schools and homeschoolers to teach what they demand to be taught. See, the problem is, until now, you could private school your child or you could homeschool your child to shield them from that liberal indoctrination. And they couldn't figure out how to force you, because if they came out and just forced you to put your kids in the public school system, there would be an uproar, and they know that. So they had to figure out how can they, for of course, the greatest of intents, good intentions, of course, force homeschooled children and privately schooled children into the same indoctrination. Well, with Common Core, now there's a national curriculum that's rising that all schools now are going to have to follow eventually. And the standards, the testing standards to get into university were based on Common Core. What that does is that forces private schools and homeschools to use Common Core so that those students can get into a university. So in other words, rather than forcing your child into public school, they're forcing the public school curriculum on your child, even if it's a homeschool, because otherwise they can't go to college. And of course, there's still going to be your private colleges that are going to buck the system. But what they're trying to do is make the Common Core testing for college required for all colleges, including private colleges. That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, that's for sure. One of the things that I got to watch around here was that, being in Indiana, our governor got rid of Common Core, and I'm not really sure what they have put in its place, but I've heard a lot of reports about how it's a lot like Common Core, but I think Indiana was the first state to get rid of Common Core after they'd done
it. Well, there's other communities, other states. We had a candidate for the superintendent of public instruction here in California named Lydia Gutierrez, who was anti-Common Core. She didn't even get past the primaries. We've got some of the schools that are bucking against it. But I actually give you an example of how how deceptive Common Core is in what they're telling these people. I meet with Congressman Ken Calvert's staff once a month. And what his head staffer, she lives in Riverside, has children in the Riverside school district. She goes to the PTO meetings. So that's sort of like PTA. It's a little different. There's PTA and there's PTO. And at the PTO meeting, they had a representative from the school explain to them Common Core and this and that and how the standards are higher and it's better for our children, and gave them the whole fish story. And so she's arguing with me about Common Core. So the next meeting, we had to show up with evidence, paperwork. Now she's looking into it. But, you know, these people are being fed with deceptive facts that are not facts. They're just studies done by liberal think tanks. You know, we're talking about how wonderful Common Core is. But one of the things, to give you just an example of how bad Common Core is, one of the things that Common Core pushes is to eliminate cursive writing. The reason why is because, you know, right now we're on keyboards and stuff like that. It's not necessary. We don't need cursive writing. Well, cursive writing actually is a very valuable thing to learn, not only so that you know how to handwrite, but also because teaching children cursive actually helps them develop their brain better. It fine-tunes fine motor skills, and so on and so forth. So by eliminating cursive writing, they are literally eliminating something that helps with childhood development. In other words, dumbing down our children, which we've been hearing for a very long time. That's what the school system does. Well, this is evidence that that is literally what they're trying to do, dumb your children down. They are trying to hinder the development of your child, the development of the child's brain. And one of the ways they're doing that is eliminating cursive. Now, of course, there's other things in Common Core, too, that are present, such as a rewriting of the meaning of the Second Amendment. You have a right to keep and bear arms while a member of a militia. That is what they're teaching.
Yeah.
They're teaching, gay history and Muslim history in American history, and then downplaying, of course, the truth and revising history and so on and so forth. But, you know, it's riddled with basically the liberal agenda. What has happened is liberalism has grown impatient. They believe they are on the edge of completely eliminating all opposition. Problem is the opposition keeps perking its head up, you know, like in Marietta. So they are going for broke. I think that's the reason why we're seeing these, getting back to the original issue, why we're seeing this illegal immigration rising so much, is they're going for broke. Why Marietta, someone said? Well, first of all, Marietta is a conservative enclave in a very liberal state. To change the voter demographics, number one, and number two, to expose the conservatives for the racists that they are, because they knew we would rise up. They just didn't think we would be so effective. But this is, you know, this is all a part of getting back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, the federal government imposing its will on these communities, and really to move us, a constitutional republic, to a democratic republic. When I say democratic republic, in other words, a socialist country, this is to move us away from being a republic and into democracy. Democracy is a transitional government between republic and oligarchy. Mob rules, the tyranny of the majority, as Jefferson called it. And as Adam said, there was never a democracy that didn't commit suicide. It is a transitional government from freedom to control of the many by the few. That's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what
if they can get us to that point, then the next step is beyond that.
Revolution.
Yeah, they'll never be satisfied with what they get.
No, it always goes, that's why they call themselves progressives, because they never stop trying to progress. They never stop trying to push the envelope a little further. It's just like, for example, homosexuality, and I've talked about this. So people, you know, come on, Doug, you know, let's have a life. So, well, it starts with that, and then it continues on. Right, you know, it's like we have said a number of times on my show, you know, once you normalize gay marriage. You normalize homosexuality, it just goes to the next thing. And I'll give you an example. Right now in Australia, there's a judge that has decided that incest is now okay and should be normalized. It is no different than homosexuality. It is a lifestyle or a sexual orientation. And the fact that we have abortion makes it okay. In Germany, right now, bestiality brothels are all the rage. That's in Germany right now. In Britain, there's a group that's trying to normalize pedophilia. So, see, it starts with something small, and it continues to build. They don't stop. They are never satisfied. They don't stop. The only way liberalism, leftism, whatever you want to call it, stops is when you stop it. It has to be forcefully stopped. Now, I teach it when I speak on the Constitution. The Constitution gives us five tools. Peaceful revolution.
Yeah.
That's what we did in Marietta. That's what our Tea Party groups are. That's what you and I are doing right now. That's peaceful revolution. Bloody revolution. That's something that the Founding Fathers went to. They didn't intend to. It began as protests. Funny thing is the shots weren't fired until they tried to come to take our guns there at Lexington and Concord. Then there's nullification.
Yeah, they didn't want that.
Yeah, funny thing, guns seem to be the last straw. Nullification, which is where the states are the final arbiter of the Constitution, not the courts. And the states, if they believe a law to be unconstitutional, can nullify it. In other words, refuse to implement it. We had 28 states sue the federal government. It was 26 states and then two single cases, and then they were combined later into the 28-state case. That sued the federal government over Obamacare. And my response has always been, what a waste of taxpayer money. You're going to sue the federal government using the federal court with federal judges paid by the federal government. How did you think it was going to turn out?
Yeah.
But by nullifying, had they have been 28 states gotten together and said, no, it's unconstitutional. We refuse to implement Obamacare. That would have been a whole different ball game. Then there's secession.
Yeah.
Tool number four is secession. And when I say secession, yes, that means states leaving the union, or at least threatening to. They are not forced to be a part of this union. It's a voluntary membership. If they were forced to be a part of it, that would be a tyranny. And then finally, convention.
Yep.
And there's three kinds of conventions. There's a con, which is a constitutional convention. There's only been one. There should only be one, and that was in 1787. Then there's an Article 5 convention. If you read Article 5 of the Constitution, to amend the Constitution, the Congress proposing amendments is not the only way to propose amendments. States can, too, through convention. The states would propose the amendments, and then the state legislatures would ratify them. Now, when I say the states proposing the amendments, that's not necessarily state government. Those delegates could be trusted members of your communities, people like me, people like you. And then finally, the third kind of convention, this is what my group, the Constitution Association, pushes. And by the way, we're having a meeting today where we're trying to create the structure so we can start creating something that can be duplicated in other cities. And I know you've been interested in what I've been doing with that. One of the things with the Constitution Association pushes is that third kind of convention. It's called the Republic Review. This is where delegates from the states, once again, not necessarily state officials, I'm talking trusted members of communities, hold a convention to audit the federal government. Now, if the states are the final arbiters of the Constitution, and it takes three-quarters of the states to ratify an amendment, in other words, to grant the federal government permission to have an authority, then that means it only takes a quarter plus one to believe something is unconstitutional, and it is. Audit the federal government through convention, and if a quarter plus one decide that that's unconstitutional, then the states decide to nullify whatever it is. Working
okay,
together.
I have that one guy I was telling you about that was in my chat room, the Signalis show.
Mm-hmm.
He's on the phone, and he may have some questions for you.
All right, and we're running out of time because my Casey AA show starts in about 5 minutes, so we'll have to make
it
quick.
Yes, I understand. Okay. Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Signalis from the Signalis show. How are you guys doing this afternoon?
Doing wonderful.
Doing well.
Well, I just wanted to call and lend my moral support to another conservative talk radio host.
I think
there's
both
two of us here.
Thank you.
Well, I'll be on from 6 to 8 tonight, Pacific time. I was just saying, I was listening to you guys, and you brought up some fantastic points, you know, about Common Core. And I just wanted to quickly say the biggest problem that we're having today Obama is just a symptom of the problem. He is a product of this Agenda 21 left-wing socialist ideology.
Yes.
And the best way, in my opinion, my considered opinion, that we're going to combat this and fight this and we will win is to confront the liberals head on. Mm-hmm. Because they can't make an argument based on the facts. Everything has to be emotion. And as I put in the chat room, yep. It's so much fun to watch them get mad and turn red. And then the next thing you know, you're accused of being a racist and a bigot. That's how you know you're beating them in the argument.
Absolutely. Well,
Alex, who's on my radio show, says, what's the definition of a racist? Someone who disagrees with liberal ideology.
No, well, now it's anybody who disagrees with Obama. But are either one of you guys here in Southern California?
Yes, I am. I'm in Murrieta.
Well, I'm in Southern Cal, too. I'm in Los Angeles.
Okay. Well, you know about all that Murrieta. The reason why Robert wanted to have me on his show today the reason why is because I was one of the organizers, or behind the organizing, should I say, of that Murrieta protest out there by Temecula. Now, if you're in the L.A. area, you know where Murrieta is.
Oh, absolutely.
Where the 15 and the 215 meet. And I actually host an AM radio show on KCAA out of San Bernardino. Even though I live in Murrieta, right now I'm in San Bernardino at the studio for that radio show. It starts in about 5-10 minutes.
What's the frequency on KCAA?
KCAARadio.com.
Okay.
Yep.
What's the frequency?
1050.
1050? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just wanted to, you know, give you my moral support, and another big problem that we have today, especially since the Nevada, since the Clive and Bundy thing, is that now the name of the militia is starting to come in more and more conversations. And the problem is that the public, by and large, is very ignorant as to what the militia is.
Right.
Yep.
All right. And concerning Murrieta, the militia was ready to come down there.
Let me explain something about the militia from a constitutional point of view. First of all, a well-regulated militia, what that means in Second Amendment, word regulated, if you look it up, a definition back then, not today's definition, is it's not something that's controlled or restricted by the government. A well-regulated militia, the word regulated was defined as to put in good order. So first of all, a well-regulated militia is a militia that is in good order. You know, when you go back to the American Revolution, that makes sense. A lot of them didn't wear shoes, muskets were different sizes, not well-trained, so on and so forth. Second of all, if you look up the U.S. Code, militia is defined in two ways, an organized militia and an unorganized militia. The organized militia is your national guard, your state militia, your naval militia. The unorganized militia is us. So we're all part of the militia.
I'm coming up to the top of the hour, and I've foregoed all of my advertisements for this hour just because of this subject. Because
I appreciate it, Robert. Thank you.
Very important, and I'm glad you were here today. And it was really fun being able to watch you on Hannity. It's been, even having to watch you with that idiot that was being interviewed more or less.
Be on Fox News 4 times over this. Of Hannity, that was a lot of fun, but that idiot, he made me look good, so I liked having him on.
he did. He made you look really good. But I was really proud to have you on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I know you've got to go because your show is about ready to start.
Yeah, my website, politicalpistachio.com, politicalpistachio.com, or you can also look me up at Douglas V as in Victory Gibbs, G-I-B-B-S, DouglasVGibbs.com, and I'll be on the air in about 5 minutes on KCAARadio.com, or if you're in the Riverside or San Bernardino market, AM 1050. Thanks, Robert. It was a pleasure. Thank you, my friend. It's great knowing you. We've known each other a long time, and anytime you want me on, you let me know.
Okay, well, thank you, and I was honored to have you here. And, I knew that you could give me a bunch of good information.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
And you have yourself a great day. Okay. We are at the top of the hour, so I'm going to be taking my break at that point, and I will be back in a few minutes.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
so glad we left that stupid party.
No joke.
Hey, baby, are you an overdue library book? Because you got fine written all over you.
Ugh, barf. What about that girl with a hoop earring?
Ridiculous. When she was dancing...
Megan, look out! Look out!
Oh, my God. Becky. Becky, are you okay? My arm. I think it's broken. Can you bend it? It's already bent in the wrong direction. I can't believe this. I'm so sorry. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Really? Just buzzed?
Yeah, I swear.
Well, in that case, my arm is fine. Ah, that's better.
You're really okay? You're serious, Becky?
No, genius. I'm not serious.
Ow! My arm, it hurts.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this station.
Wow, yeah, since the storm, it's been crazy busy for us. We got all kinds of office desks coming in. Now, here's a, this is a fancy one right here. It's missing a leg, but that's all right. Whatever. Washers and dryers from the laundromat. Wow, check this out. Another deep fryer. And I'm not sure what this doohickey is. Yeah, most businesses weren't ready for a storm like that, you know. But our work's really piling up here at Roberts & Son Salvage.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency. And 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
From West Central Indiana, one of the few states that runs a budget in the black, comes the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show. Hi, I'm Kathy Henners of Daily Roll Call to let you know that traditional Americans are still considered traitors in the Obama nation, and we're proud of our constitutional conservatism. Obama can't touch this. You're listening to Hour 2 of the show, and we're being broadcast to you through conservativenationmedia.com. And now, the voice of reason in this unreasonable world, your host, Robert Garding.
Now, I've still got... Signalis show on the phone here. Was there anything else you wanted to add to what we had been talking about with Doug?
I just want to say, I just want to lend my moral support to you, and everything you were bringing up is exactly right. And moreover, it's exactly what the liberals don't want to hear, so now you know you're on the right track. Because the one thing about liberals is that they don't like to be challenged. And once you start challenging every single thing that comes out their mouth, you'll see just how MF they are, including the President of the United States. I would love for him to call into my show so I can hand it to him on internet radio.
Yeah, I've always kind of thought that too, but, you know, the day that he hears this show, is, I think hell would freeze over first. But one of the things that really surprised me was last week on this show, I actually had quite a few people in my chat room, and a lot of them, with the names they were using, it looked like they were trolls. And we were sitting there thinking, all of us, that it's going to start pretty soon. Something's going to happen, but they were asleep or something. Nobody said a thing.
Well, the thing is about liberals, you have to understand something. Liberalism is actually a mental disorder. I mean, it's like this, like they could be 45 years old, but in their head they never got past 12 or 13. It's always this, gimme, 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 gimme. I'm a victim. I never had a chance. I was condemned in the womb, blah, blah, blah. Basically, they're just a big bunch of crybabies, and I hate to say this. Now, this is going to be controversial, but, you know, I really don't care. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. The conservative electorate is far more intelligent than the Democrat electorate. I hate to say it. Now, there it is in a nutshell. It's my considered opinion, and I'm entitled to it. And I'm sure that there's a lot of other people that agree with me on this. Just look at some of the examples of the people that voted for Obama. Peggy Josephs, the Obama phone lady. I mean, it's unreal that we have somebody that stupid that's allowed to vote.
Well, you know, I found a little article about her this week. Well, actually, it wasn't her. It was another one that had talked about how if Obama would, she wouldn't have to pay her electric bill in, or her gas bills anymore,
yeah,
or her mortgage bill. Well,
yeah.
And this week there was an article out there how she is now saying that she's found out that's not true, and she is saying that he is one of the worst presidents we've ever had. So I guess there's a turnaround point somewhere and for some of these people, which is really cool to see. But the sad part about it is that most of these people have to be completely cut to the quick before they realize, hey, now, wait a minute, I made a mistake here voting for that guy.
Well, if you'll notice that lately concerning this border crisis that we got, which in my opinion is nothing but an all-out invasion, albeit it's, you know, girls and children and stuff like that, but now you're going to see a large portion of the black population are now starting to rebel against the president because he wants to spend these billions of dollars on kids who shouldn't even be in the country in the first place, and he's not doing anything to help the inner cities or the ghetto. And now a
yeah.
lot of them are also starting to understand that the president tries to self-identify with them, but he never grew up in a ghetto. He never had to fight to survive every day. This guy was born with a
nope.
silver spoon in his mouth. So now they're starting to see just what a hypocrite the guy is. To mention
yep.
that he's probably the most inept president we've ever had as far as domestic policy, foreign policy, as far as being a commander-in-chief. You know what I call him? I call him the crybaby in chief, because if he doesn't get his way,
yep.
he throws a temper tantrum.
He throws a temper tantrum, exactly right. But, you know, I did a thing on him last week where Clinton is now ecstatic and almost orgasmic over the fact that he's now not considered the worst president Carter, that he's now considered not the worst president we've ever had. Somebody else is worse than him.
For those of us that are old enough to remember Mr. Peanut Farmer, Jimmy Carter. Now, I'll just say this about President Carter. I have no doubt that in his heart he is a good man. He had
yep.
the traditional Christian values. The man was a naval officer in World War II. I'm going to give him kudos for that. The problem that
yep.
Jimmy Carter had was that once he got in the White House, he forgot that he's the President of the United States. He forgot that he's the commander-in-chief of our military. He tried to do an end-around of those responsibilities with his Christian principle. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. You remember when the Iranian hostage crisis started. That's when ABC Newsline started with Ted Koppel. Every night after the 10
yeah.
o'clock news, all right, Ted Koppel would go into what's going on. Now,
I remember that, and then they actually
yeah.
got a show that started because of that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, and Jimmy Carter, finally, when he was at to the point where everybody said, Mr. President, you have to do something, then we had that botched rescue attempt. Well, at least Jimmy Carter at some point, especially when in 79, when the Russians invaded Afghanistan, well, let me rephrase, the Soviets invaded Afghanistan, then he realized he's going to have to do a 180. But by that time, it's too late. Day late and a dollar short. So,
yep.
you know, so, and I used to just think that Jimmy Carter was the worst president until he had Barry. And I'm
well,
going to say
I've
something
never...
else, and hopefully this will make everybody laugh. I mean, it's going to sound ludicrous, and it's going to sound almost ridiculous, but it's absolutely accurate. You knew he was going to be a bad president, all right? You knew this was going to be bad. When he threw out that first pitch at the 2009 All-Star Game, did you see that?
Yeah, you threw it like a girl.
Okay, I've seen six-year-old girls that could throw a harder, straighter ball than that.
Yeah,
so
my,
if a man cannot, okay, if he can't throw a baseball,
my 12-year-old can throw a better ball.
Inches, yeah, all right, if he can't throw a baseball 60 feet 6 inches, why in the hell would anybody think that he's going to be a great president? So I'm just going to leave it at that. I'll rest my case.
Well, when he was running for president, one of the things, I was listening to everything he said, and people were talking
mm-hmm.
about how this hope and change and all this stuff, and they were saying how Bush was such a bad president and that this change that Obama was going to bring us was going to be great, and I just kept saying, aren't you listening to what this man is telling us? You know, because he was telling us what he was going to do.
Okay, well, okay, I don't know whether to blame him or blame his speechwriter, but I remember what he said on his victory speech in 2008, and you may remember this. It was about 12 and a half, 13 minutes into his speech, and he says, to all those Americans whose support I have yet to earn, I want you to know that I hear your voices, and I need your help, and I will be your president too. Now, if you were one of the 43% that voted for John McCain, why in the hell would Barack Obama care what you think?
Well, I knew he wouldn't, because when the whole election was over and John McCain went to him, he says, I'm glad this is over now. We can get together and start getting some work done. And Obama told him, no, John, I won, you lost. Elections have consequences. And that right there told me exactly what was coming.
It's like I said, I'm just glad that there's your show, my show, and other conservative talk shows on, so we can face the liberals. And most of all, the people that I think we have to concentrate on are the young people. Now, he's already lost a great deal of the millennials, because when they thought they were going to get the free lunch with Obamacare, and now they found out that they're going to have to actually pay for it, well, he cut his own throat with them now, despite the fact we've been trying to tell them about Obama for the last 5.5 years. So now they had to get the tough love. They had to learn the hard way. The problem is now they've dragged all the rest of us in the toilet with them.
Yep, and that's the bad part about it, because now, you know, the rest of us have to suffer right along with them.
Oh, we're starting to turn that around now, because I'm starting to see a lot of good signs out there that now the liberal agenda, the wheels have come off his administration. The president is literally standing out there naked now, because his inaction over the plane that shot down over the Ukraine. He did the same thing. He went to fundraisers instead of acting like a president. He did the same thing that he did over the Benghazi thing. There's 7 hours of his life that nobody can account for. Now, I don't know whether he was out in back of the White House smoking a cigarette, getting high, getting drunk, or just hiding from Michelle. I don't know. But we do know that the next day he went to Las Vegas to have some fundraiser with some rap singer or something like that.
Yep. I think what he was doing is just hiding from the news. He knew it wasn't going to be good for him, so he just stayed out of it because he knew he wasn't going to say anything good. And when it comes to that, he's just about as bad as Biden is. Biden can't keep his foot out of his mouth every time he talks, and that it's getting to that point with Obama too. Every time he speaks up, his foot goes right in there.
Considered opinion, I think Joe Biden is in the early stages of Alzheimer's. And concerning the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, there's no doubt in my mind that the man is senile. He says something today,
oh,
and 2 days
absolutely.
Later he can't remember what he said.
Absolutely. And then, you know, I've got a recording of him. It was just, let me see, I've got right here. Here it is.
Had we done comprehensive immigration reform, we wouldn't be having this issue. And everyone here, the border is secure. Martin Heinrich talked to the caucus today. He's a border state senator. He said he can say without any equivocation, the border is secure.
I almost fell off my chair when I heard that.
as Christians, the blessed of us are supposed to help the less of us. But in his case, it's really hard to do that, considering that the man intentionally went out of his way to protect this failure of a president. Like, for example, changing the rule on filibuster in the Senate from 60 to a simple majority. That is going to bite him straight in the ass when the Republicans take back the Senate. That's my prediction. You can hang your stocking on it.
Yep. And I've said so several times on this show, well, actually more than several times, but I just can't wait for that to happen. It really, you know, it just can't come soon enough for me.
Trust me, brother, it's coming. But this is one thing now, before I leave the show, because I've taken up enough of your time, but this is one thing I think every American needs to be ready for. We know this president is immature and petulant. We know that lately it can be proven that the Department of Homeland Security, FEMA, even the Social Security Administration, has been buying up millions of rounds of ammunition. They're getting ready for something. The problem for them
they
is
know
now,
something's coming.
Okay, the problem for them is now we're on to them. I think you will see a resurgence of the militia. Now, I know that sounds controversial to people, but that's the only thing that's going to stop him because as of lately, the last couple of years, he has been purging the military of senior officers, especially generals and flag officers of the Navy, with the single question, will you order your subordinates to fire on Americans? If they say no, they're asked to retire. Tells you something right there. But in my honest opinion, having talked to law enforcement and military personnel, I think that 99% of the military would disobey that order, and I think that at least that much of law enforcement would disobey that order. It's clearly an unconstitutional order, and what I'm referring to is, everybody looks this up, Section 1031 of the National Defense Authorization Act. Everybody needs to read that. They need to read it because it's very important.
Okay, that's
it
Section
telling.
Section 231 of the what?
1031, Section 1031 of the National Defense Authorization Act. And go down there where you see it, where it talks about belligerent persons.
Okay?
Okay. Yeah. I just want to say thank you for letting me come on the show. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for coming on.
Okay, brother. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. I'm going to stop for a break now. A couple minutes late, but here's our 15-minute break now.
If you're wondering where Rush goes to do his show prep, you found it.
Hey, everybody. Rachel Ray here. Nothing puts a bigger smile on my face than cooking up a big meal for family and friends. But there's not enough room at my table for the 17 million kids in America who are struggling with hunger. These children, that's one out of every five, often have to skip meals because there's just nothing to eat in the kitchen. Yet there's more than enough healthy, nutritious food produced right here in America to feed every last hungry child. If only there was a way to get it to them. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food to give hope to hungry kids and their families all across our country. But they can't do it without your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America at your local food bank and at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
Okay, we are back. My first hour, I was hoping that Doug would show up, and he did. I had asked him several weeks ago if he could be on the show because of his involvement with what has been going on in Murrieta, California, and he showed up this morning or at the beginning of the first hour, and he was here the whole hour, so everyone who wasn't here then, it was a great segment. There were absolutely no commercials. I didn't stop for anything, and we talked the whole hour, so it was really good. And Signalis came in towards the end of that, and he joined us, so it was great. I had written down on my blog on May the 4th of 2013, and in that post I asked how many of us know just what direction that the way that the left works. How many of you know
that the way the left works is to use the domino effect of making one of our laws fall so that more will fall with them. How many of you know that if the Second Amendment of our Constitution falls, which is the amendment that's been under constant barrage by the left, that some of us see it falling soon, as other amendments will fall when it does? In other words, if the Second Amendment to our Constitution falls, the one to follow it will be the first. You know, when the first one falls, so will the next, and then the next, and the next. And we have to look at their ploy this way, folks. It's, do you like your freedoms? Well, they are under attack by the left, because according to them, we don't deserve to have our freedoms. And the left has attacked our freedoms in many and various ways. Tighter restrictions on our cars, making sure that America cannot drill for our own oil, so we stay totally dependent on the Middle East for it. You know, those people over there, they hate us. And the problem is, that is the fuel that moves this nation. And when Obama joined his campaign to become our so-called commander-in-chief, he told us, because of his policies on cap-and-trade policies, that energy prices would necessarily skyrocket. And I bring this point up many times. When he went into office, the price of gasoline was already high at $1.75 a gallon. I wish it was there again. It's almost $4 a gallon here. Got a notice on my phone yesterday or day before from Gas Buddy saying that the prices of gas in Indianapolis are getting ready to go up again. Well, that is one promise that Obama has kept. But, you know, we were talking about several of the people that are running our government and how they are becoming senile or petulant to the point where they don't know what the heck they are doing. And, you know, I listed, you know, Harry Reid, he's about as senile as they can get. And I wish I was where Ron is, and he says it's 327 where he's at today. I haven't seen 327 in a long time. We, my wife shops at Kroger here, and she got to the point where she had like 40 cents off a gallon of gas at Kroger, and she went and filled up all of our cars that day because she got 40 cents off a gallon, and it was still $3.13. And that just, you know, and I can remember when I was growing up, I'd see gas for 29 cents a gallon. You could fill up a 20-gallon tank with, won't even hardly move the gas gauge anymore. But, you know, what our freedoms are being taken from us daily, and most think that the Second Amendment is secure. But if you go to the liberal town of Chicago, the Second Amendment doesn't exist there. It has been gotten rid of. The average American citizen that by rights is guaranteed the right to bear arms cannot. It is illegal to own a firearm in Chicago unless you are a policeman or something like that. So that means that only the police and the criminals in Chicago have guns. And we all know just how long it takes to break into a house and kill someone inside as compared to the time it takes for the police to respond to said incident. Time they get there, the dirty deed is long done and finished. If the people have their right to own firearms, many of the murders in Chicago would be the other way around. The criminals would be getting the short end of the stick instead of the law-abiding citizen. This has been proven time and again, yet the liberals cannot seem to get it through their thick skulls that no matter how many laws they make on gun control, they are only working to help the criminal and turn law-abiding people into defenseless people who can't defend themselves, who can't defend their families against somebody who will have a gun no matter what the law says. somewhere, and I can't remember exactly where this week, but somebody in some town that has gun laws like Chicago said that the people, I think it's down in Florida, the people need to have guns because the police aren't going to be able to handle what's coming because they're losing people who are police, so their numbers are going to go down, and you know darn good and well that the criminals' numbers are not going to go down. Drives me nuts that so much is going on in this nation, and we're just finally starting to wake up to the dangers that we all face. Maybe everyone needs a 1776 moment. Maybe we should stop funding terrorists and start funding freedom fighters here in our own hemisphere. I think that would be an excellent idea. But our government doesn't think that way. To me, it seems it would be a good idea to invest in our own country and our own way of defending ourselves and our own way of life. Well, like I said, our government doesn't feel this way. They'd rather fund our enemies and people who hate us. I never did understand that kind of thinking. Why would people who are supposed to be there to keep America and Americans safe rather than help people who want to hurt us? Obama is the number one person who feels this way right now. And it is, like I've said many times, it's time to get rid of him and all others who feel like he does. America's future does not need them. And that includes people on both sides of the aisle here. We've got John McCain, who is a rhino at best. He'll go to the other side of the aisle every chance he gets because that's by the other side. He'll never be liked by the other side because he has an R in front of his name, no matter how often he agrees with them or whatever. Lindsey Graham's another one. He's got an R in front of his name, but he should be a Democrat because of the way he feels most of the time. But, you know, Flycatch said it really good in the chat room. He said, we have lost the spirit of individualism. We need to get that back. We need to get it back to the point where we are all individual Americans and proud of this country. Because if we don't, I'm afraid that what's coming our direction, none of us are going to like. And that's the way I feel about it. I'm sorry about my throat today. Like I said, I'm catching something. I'm not sure what it is. But I'll be back after a few minutes, but after this break.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811. PCSforAutomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
My name is Ruth Rusey. I volunteer with United Way, reading to children to help prepare them for a better academic future. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor, Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
Want to help those affected by Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines? To donate, visit philippinesrelief.adcouncil.org. That's philippinesrelief.adcouncil.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Okay, in a stunning display of callousness, the Defense Department announced last week that thousands of soldiers, many serving as commanding officers in Afghanistan, would be notified in the coming weeks that their service to the country is no longer needed. To me, it's just another example of our government thinking they are all that they are what will keep this nation safe, what will keep the people safe. They don't like the military. They don't like us conservatives. And that's just several of the things that is wrong with the Obama administration and our government the way it sits now. I remember when Obama first started running, talking about how bad President Bush was, how we needed a change, and the bad part about that was the change came in the face of Barack Hussein Obama. And ever since he hit the mainstream, the media has been in his back pocket, in his bed, for him every chance they could, and there's been many chances, excuse me. The problem that we have here is that the media that we have in this country, be it the Big Three and MSNBC and others, they do not think before they open their mouths. The only thing they think about is protecting Obama, protecting the things that he stands for, because they stand for it too. My ideas on this is, thank God right now we have a second media out here that is able to put out the news that the mainstream media will not. And the funny part about this whole thing is that I have witnessed just over the past couple of weeks, the mainstream media is starting to pick up on things that they weren't picking up on before. Well, they probably were, but they weren't reporting on this stuff. But they're starting to do it. And I think it's not because they're starting to realize that they need to start reporting this for the good of the country. I think they're only starting to report this stuff because they're trying to cover their own butts. They don't want everybody to consider them to be incompetent, which they are. They don't want to be seen as somebody who will not tell the truth when the truth is required. So every once in a while, you'll see them hit right on the money with something. And I've noticed a subtle change in that. A few years ago, if something like that happened, they would always just backpedal as fast as they could from that point, get it out there, and then they'd backpedal, or the person who put it out would be fired. Now, you're seeing that reaction to fire or backpedal is slowing down. It says in the chat room, has anyone noticed that Obama is not blaming Bush for his failure during the last 2 months? And the reason why he has stopped is because he no longer has to.
He says they have been exposed for being nothing more than reporters and not journalists, and that's about the media. Well, that is essentially the word I was looking for. They're reporting, but they're not reporting the truth. They're reporting what they want to get out there. And the sad part about that is that their bosses are putting out what they're putting out because it's what they want out there. But it's funny. That we are finding that the media is finally starting to notice things that they never noticed before. Like this whole thing in Murrieta with Doug. If it wouldn't have been for Fox News bringing this out like they did and blogs like his Political Pistachio and his radio show at KCAA AM in San Bernardino, I think is what he said it was. I think it's 10:50 a.m. And he's on his show right now. He has been a big focal point in what's going on down there because he's been someone who will back off and say, no, wait a minute, I can't do this because it might be detrimental to me. And I can remember some years ago now when he was first starting out with me on Blog Talk Radio, and I think it was a year or so after that, but somebody threw rocks at his house. And I can't remember if they broke windows or not, but he had a momentary lapse there where he started thinking, now, wait a minute here. I've got a family here. I've got a wife here. I need to protect them, and he backed off. He stopped with his blog. He stopped with his with Political Pistachio. He just shut everything down, and it was his wife who pulled him back into the match, into the whole thing. His wife is from South America, I think is what he had said. She is a legal immigrant to the United States, and she told him that he can't let them win. He can't let them push him out of the way. And we can all see what has happened. Now, he's, like I said, he's, this past couple of weeks, he's been on CNN, Al Jazeera, believe it or not, Hannity, Fox and Friends, and any number of radio stations and TV stations over this whole thing because he would not remain silent. But he's not silent, I think, because of his wife, because she pushed him back into it after he gave up. He didn't want his family to be put in jeopardy. Wife said, you need to keep this up. If not, our safety will be a moot point. But I am proud to have Doug as a friend. I've always been real proud of that fact. I knew that someday he would make a name for himself because he's a real go-getter. And if you ever get a chance to listen to him on KCAA radio, he's in California. I think it's KCAA.com. And his name is Douglas B. Gibbs. And I know a lot of people here know him. A lot of people around Blog Talk Radio and conservative circles know him or know of him. He is a great person to have on our side in the fight against this tyrannical government that we have in place. And it's just one of those things that I keep going back to. You know, and when this whole thing broke out in Murrieta, and he was there, I had a real big pang of jealousy that this was happening to him. But I'm glad it has, because he handled this well, and he's doing well with it. And he if you want to know somebody who knows the Constitution, this man does. He knows it very well. When I met him, I also met Loki, who died last year. Loki was another one who was, I always considered Loki a constitutional scholar. This man knew the Constitution almost inside and out. So V. Gibbs and him have been friends for a long time, and Doug is still going. And I was real proud to have him on the show. If you want to hear him talking, the first hour of this show, I had absolutely no commercials. I didn't break for anything, and we talked the whole hour, so it was really good. We talked about what was going on in Murrieta and what's been going on all over this nation with what's happening. And it was a good segment. The stars at night are big and bright deep in the heart of Texas, and conservativenationmedia.com has our own big and bright Texas star, Michael Berryman. We welcome Michael and his patriotic, no-nonsense brand of Americanism Monday afternoons now. Michael is involved in the Texas GOP and Tea Party politics as anyone can get, so you won't want to miss his take on the Lone Star State conservative goings-on, direct to you from Fort Worth. And it's the Michael Berryman Show, Sundays, pretty sure. I keep getting those two mixed up as Michael Berryman and Bing Fisher. I think Bing Fisher is the one who's on Sundays, and Michael Berryman's on Monday. One of the other there, they used to be together on Sundays, but at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Out of Katy, Texas, shoppers who thought they had no time to spare after noticing two kids in a hot Jeep Monday afternoon took matters into their own hands. The incident happened at a strip mall near the North Fry Road in Little York. Some of them tried to smash open the windows to try to free the small boy and girl. It was a crazy situation, said Gabriel Del Valle, who used his cell phone to shoot video of the incident. Del Valle said he stepped out of his nearby shop after hearing the kids crying out in desperation. The kids were in there crying, he said. I mean, you would understand, it's real hot. He said one guy used a hammer to shatter the glass, and even then they could barely open the doors because there was a child lock on. The kids were in there crying. For several minutes, the kids were freed. Fortunately, it appears the children were unharmed. Last week, a man in North Carolina sat in a hot car to demonstrate how excruciating it can be. He posted the video on YouTube in an attempt to prevent another child from dying. Sometimes I just don't understand people. How can they think that it will be all right to leave kids locked up in a dark car with windows rolled up in the summertime in any place, let alone Houston, Texas? No wonder people like Obama get elected. People are stupid. And that I just have absolutely no respect for anybody that has to do things that are like that. Just leaving kids in a car in the summertime, that's just downright wrong.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
A boy born in Joplin, Missouri, was fascinated by anything with wheels and a motor. The odds of him going on to fascinate millions with his talent? 1 in 260,000. The odds of this born racer having 157 career top 10 finishes in NASCAR? 1 in 125 billion. But every driver seeks the pinnacle of their achievements. The odds of him winning both the Daytona 500 and the Brickyard 400 in the same year? 1 in 195 million. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm NASCAR driver Jamie McMurray, and my niece has autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hey, sweetie, what's going on?
Well, honey, I have some news.
Okay, what?
All that training paid off. I got the job.
Oh, I knew you would get it. So when do you start?
When you donate stuff to Goodwill, you help provide job training for people right here in your community. Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Finally, we here at the New White Conservatism Radio Show want to leave you with our weekly thought of the day. This portion of the thing is probably harder for me to write than any of them because these are my words. I'm not going to a website and finding something and then adding my ideas to it. This is mine. The days of having common sense and integrity seem to be in the past. Excuse me, there are too many people around nowadays who do not seem to possess either one of those traits. And the sad part is we are electing some of these same people to office to rule over us. Barack Obama has, for the most part, been protected from the things he is doing to this nation by the people who elected him and the media who lay in the same bed with him, figuratively speaking. But things seem to be falling apart for him now, and all I can say is it's about freaking time. Along with others that follow them, I have reported on several of them today. Harry Reid, to me, is nothing more than a senile old man who can't figure out what is right and what is wrong, and like Biden, he gets it wrong most of the time. Problem is, as I see it, is that the American people and their inability to check things out before they let their hearts lead them in ways that they should or should not be going. Barack Obama told everyone that he was going to promise hope and change, and many believed him, though now even ones that were so adamant that he was the new Messiah are finding out that wasn't the truth. The trouble is America has had to suffer the consequences of that election and the one following it when he was voted in as president both times. Remember that woman who, during the campaign of then-candidate Obama, was saying that she was going to vote for Obama because he was going to give them hope and change and that she would have her mortgage and her gas bills paid. Well, now she is saying that that has not happened. As a matter of fact, things have gotten far worse for her and her family, and they are really struggling because the cost of both those items has skyrocketed along with almost everything else except her wages. That is the sad part of voting with your heart and leaving your head and reason out of the mix. We now have to suffer the consequences of Obama's ideals, listened to in the first place. He told us exactly what he was planning to do. Now America is $17 trillion plus in the hole with other countries, and if you ever figured that amount out with interest, it is something that may never get paid off. And the ones stuck with paying it for their entire lives will be our kids. So then the next time you hear Harry Reid or Nancy Pelosi talk of Republicans' war on women or their war on children, think about that, what they have done to our future generations. They will never be able to live the good life that we have been able to up till now because they will be suffering under the burden that Obama himself put them under. A staggering debt that is next to impossible to pay off, and it will have to be paid, folks. Our generation won't be able to do it because we're at the end of our working lives. Our kids haven't started theirs yet. They have. They're at the beginning. And they will be the ones paying for Obama's extravagances. Now, it isn't fair to lay all this on Obama's doorstep, as the presidents and governments before him did their share.
But Obama has spent more than every other president before him, from Washington to George W. Bush inclusive. So I do lay most of the blame at his doorstep. And while he lays the blame on the Republicans for not allowing him to do more to us, there is one thing that he said that is absolutely true, though. That was after the election when John McCain and he was, when John McCain said he was glad it was over and now they could proceed to work together. Obama told McCain, "No, John, I won, you lost. Elections have consequences. For we are living those consequences now, and we have even heaped more on top of that because we were stupid enough to elect him to a second term while keeping Pelosi, Reid, and others in office. When are we going to wise up? After this nation has gone past its point of no return?" I certainly hope not, because that is coming. All we have to do is look a little bit and look with our eyes to the future, and we will see it coming. This nation is not a cornucopia of never-ending money. The money has an end. And we have people in office who are supposedly on our side, like John Boehner, who is saying that a vote to defund Obamacare is never going to happen in the House. He has the backbone of a snail, and he won't stand up for what the people say they need to have. He doesn't care either. He is another one that needs to be taken out of office and never allowed to return. And Ron in the chat room said, "There is always hope. If not, then why struggle?" And the hope is there. I am seeing the struggle every day. We have people hanging banners over the freeways here in around Indianapolis protesting the immigration problem. This has really galvanized people in a way that I wouldn't have really thought about before this whole thing blew up in Marietta and Doug was involved in that. But the thing that we always have to do, too, is to be involved in our kids' education and lives, too. Because like I told Doug, there was a time my girls go to pretty good schools. And that's kind of a oxymoron because most government schools are not. But they go to pretty good schools. Even so, when Obama won his re-election, the school decided that they were going to have a rally and have that rally for Obama. I told the school, or I told my girls, that they were not allowed to go to that. They went in, told the principal what I had said, and I found out that they were made to go anyway. And all hell broke loose over that one. But this whole thing with what is going on with the immigrants, illegal immigrants, and the children. This is just the beginning, folks. If this isn't stopped, so much more coming, and it's not going to be good. I'm glad that everybody was here today. The first part of the show, like I said, had Douglas V. Gibbs on it the whole hour. It's a good show to download and listen to because he had a lot of good things to say. A lot of good points were brought up on that, and I'm glad that everybody is here today. Our lineup of shows on CNM now have some great ones, where we start the week on Sundays with the Michael Berryman Show.
excuse me, which is the old Soldier of Patriotism, which had Michael and Bing on it, airing 4 to 6 p.m. on Sundays. American by Design has moved to Mondays with Bing Fisher and is now on from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance is now on Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. The Real Radio Free America with Duke Brooks airs on Wednesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. On Thursdays, we have the Liberty and Constitution Community with Matthew Opalisky from 8 to 10 p.m., also Eastern Time. And, of course, on Saturdays, you have yours truly, the infidel behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world. CNN is growing, and we hope that everyone tells their friends and acquaintances about our great shows and our great lineup as we continue to do the things that we need to stop the stupid people, and there's plenty of them. And it really kind of a sad affairs, actually. But America now needs all the help she can get, and the conservative nation media has the shows to help that to happen. We must never accept the world as we see it, but as God meant it to be. I am determined to always help in returning us to the recipe that made America great. That means being active in what this country needs, not sitting on my couch and complaining as I watch things happen. That won't help this nation at all. That will be just part of the problem that is destroying this nation. We are at the crossroads now in restoring our constitutional republic. That is, now is the time to act. We must actively change culture, for that is where the liberals have it over us for now. And I know that this can be done. And until next week, God bless you all and have a great week and stay safe, and I'll see you again next week. God bless you all. God bless you all.